Welcome to Senior Perspectives. I'm Jean Duncan, and I'll be the host today. Senior Perspectives is brought to you by MCTV and the Senior Center, and we're in the Mendocino Coast Television studios today. And our guest is Marilyn Mother Bear Scott, and she's a poet and a priestess. And so that should be a really interesting interview. And she hung out with Ken Kesey, and she has a lot of interesting background. So welcome to our show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Jean. I've hung out with really, I have to say, a lot of interesting people in my life starting back east. So I know Kesey is of a local interest, so I know he's
absolutely
something that people want to hear about, but gosh, there's an awful lot. Where shall we start?
Well, you told me that you went to Bennington, and maybe we should start there, or did you want to start before there?
Well, I went to Boston University and Bennington, and then back to Boston to marry and do a lot of things that we can talk about there. That's where I started dance at Bennington.
I see.
I loved it that we didn't have to do gymnastics, that we could dance instead of doing gymnastics. And I had studied dance as a youngster too in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But when I got to Bennington, we could do dance every day and did. So it was wonderful. And then when I went back to Boston, I continued my dance practice and performed in several companies and also created my own theater group. I've been into theater since I was a child, into words, into performance. I used to make all the little plays in the living room on Thanksgiving and other family occasions.
Well, the dance people, you mentioned Merce Cunningham and a few others that you were involved with.
Yes, there was a wonderful organization in Boston during that period of time. Just started up, really, called Dance Circle. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still going on. It might still be going on. At the time, they would bring in master classes. You could attend master classes there and have periods of time, like a couple of weeks where you danced with that person, Merce Cunningham, Anna Sokoloff, Jose Limon, and just, I can't remember all the names at this moment, but all the people.
Did you ever meet Twyla Tharp?
Actually, I met her briefly once, but she came a little after that period. But what a wonderful choreographer. I adored her. Mm-hmm. And theater, I created my own theater at the time. It was called Boston Little Theater. I incorporated. And we did plays of social and political significance, things like Lorca and the One Acts of Saroyan and Bertolt Brecht and those kind of pieces that we hoped would bring awareness. And it was started out in a church basement, then went to the wharves before they were all rebuilt in Boston. And we created a loft there. And Ann Maslow created the art gallery. And my husband and I created the theater, an open proscenium theater. And it was really wonderful. Oh. Leary and Alpert used to come to our plays, and we got good reviews. And
oh, wow.
It was a very wonderful period of time.
Yeah, I was involved in theater in Berkeley, and those names really resonate because they were doing some interesting things there, too, then.
Well, one thing that I would like to say is that even though the adult life is, you know, kind of fascinating, the young life, my youthful as a child, that life was very important in the way my energy and focus went. And I didn't have a clear idea what I wanted to do when I grew up, you know.
Was that in Boston?
That's what it was
as a child?
No, that was in Philadelphia.
Oh.
But my father, I'm a first generation American on my father's side. He was born in Scotland and came over at 11. So we lived in Northeast Philadelphia. And he volunteered for to go into the war, in the Second World War, and lost his life. So he lost his life when I was 7, and it really did create an open pathway of spirit for me. I consider him my first spiritual teacher. And so that's why I brought this one piece. I don't know if is this a good time to
read it? It's a good time to read it, yes.
Because it has a little bit of this background in it.
Good.
I call it solitaire. And I'm sure a lot of people love playing cards. I know I grew up playing cards. I still play cards. The deck of cards sat on the end table, begging to be played. I wish that my grandson were here. We always enjoy a game of 500 or rummy or casino. He's 15 now, so many other things to do. I taught him to play cards when he was young, and I encouraged his interest in prestidigitation and other magics. Even younger than he is now, he could hold a small crowd with his banter and legerdemain. His grandfather, my father, was a magician too. He entertained crowds in the church basement. My sister and I, along with other church kids, sat in the front row. I watched every move he made and still was in awe. One time he let me and my sister help. He held out the top hat. I put in the flour. She put in the baking powder. We cracked a couple of eggs into the hat. Daddy dipped his magic wand into the hat, stirred a few times round, passed the wand over the hat, incanted the magic words, abracadabra. He reached in and brought out fully baked cupcakes, offering them to all the kids. It wasn't every day during those years, the wartime 40s, that we were treated to cupcakes. I was so proud. He was the king of hearts in my deck of cards. I picked up my deck, feeling the comfort of how it fit in my hand, fingertip to thumb. I felt the edges lifting up some of the cards, letting the remainder of the deck fall open in my hand, releasing the cards. A free fall. Made the deck whole again. I repeated the process several times, a shuffle. Then, wrapping the sides of the deck on the table, I evened up the edges, separated it in halves, fanned the two parts into one. That unique riffling sound, impossible to replicate in words. Then I tapped the deck on the table, rap, rap, ready to deal. My sister and I played cards with each other and with cousins on my father's side. The Methodists encouraged a bit of fun. The Presbyterians, my mother's side, were more stern. I'm not sure if it was really okay to play cards in their book, but we did. It was not long before the fun was done. The card playing, the magic acts, the church basement, Sunday's church pew. My Scots-born father volunteered to defend America's freedom for us, his kids, all kids. Within a few months of the service, he was gone. It was a crying shame. That war ended soon after his death. The flickering cards in a fast shuffle. Life, a magic act. Now you see it, now you don't. I deal the cards, placing them on the table. One up, six down. One up, five down. One up, four down. A game of solitaire sets my mind at ease.
That's wonderful. Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you for reading that. So you were quite young when you lost your father. And that changed your life to make you go into the things you later did?
Yes, and it is an unusual story, really. I've never told it, I don't think, in public. But he came to me every year on his birthday in a dream and spoke to me directly. And also,
answered like questions as I grow up, because when a child is set loose of his moorings, his mother and father, you know, he or she is really cast adrift, and there's a lot more individuality that occurs because that mooring is gone. I grew up, after that, my mother went to the Pocono Mountains, and my sister and I were brought up by my grandparents. They were just wonderful and very steady, and, you know, it was a good place for us to be. But there was an element that was had moved on, that had disappeared. And so my father's company, like, came to me, like, sometimes I'd feel like, oh, my gosh, as I was growing up, why did I do that? You know, that was not a good thing. And he would, like, his words were just, it would be from him somehow in my head, and say, oh, don't worry about it. You did that. That's done. And, you know, you have a lot more life to live, and you can make your own choices in it. And I hearken back to those kinds of languaging and words because, you know, I always say, follow your nose long enough, you get to where you're going, right? And that's what I did. You know, I kind of went in that way, the things of choice and freedom and loyalty and family. Those kinds of things were the Scott clan, you know, mm-hmm. badge, you know, love. And he was definitely loved. He was a human and a humane person. And so, well, everyone said, oh, you're like your father. And, you know, I'll own that.
Were you raised by your father's parents?
No, my mother's.
Mother's.
Yeah.
What was she doing going off to the Poconos when she had a little girl?
Well, I suppose that she married young and had two children, one at 19 and one at 21 or two, something like that. And she moved in with her parents. And then it just got a little top heavy in that house. That's all I can
say
right now.
But was she acting or doing?
Oh, no, she went to the Poconos. This is a good question, though, because she had quite the sparkle. My mother had definitely had quite the sparkle in her eyes and was a very sweet, wonderful woman. Sometimes a little, you know, sad, a lot of things that happened in her life. But she went up there. My mother and father were both bookkeepers, and she got a job in the Pocono Mountains away from, only 100 miles away. I went every summer.
And I thought maybe she was a comic or something.
No, she was fairly serious, but very sweet and fun.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, there's so much to talk about in your background because, we don't know how you got out west, for one thing.
Okay, we should jump to that. Because after I graduated from school, was very important to me. That was another part of my life that developed more fully, almost because I didn't have my mother and father there. My grandparents were very steady, but you know, they were kind of on the, what are you going to do for a living? What are you going to do for a job? And at school, I would say that my intellect got encouraged, and, you know, I did very well. I loved to perform, and when I got a lot of positive energy back, it served me well. I was the director of the high school play. I did theater all the time, both when I went to church and when I went to school. And it was in my high school days that my spiritual pathway started to unfold into a more diverse relationship with all that is. Mm-hmm. If people ask me, you know, what is your practice? Who are you, religiously or spiritually? I say something like, and let's see if I can put it together right now, I am an indigenous Budio-pagan mystic Christo, yeah. So that, all that eclecticism.
We're not really going to put this in a box.
No, I think that's part of my nature.
Yeah.
And I think it was part of the times, part of the late 50s, part of, I graduated in 55, in January 55, and went to the Pocono Mountains and stayed with my mother. And then I had been accepted into Boston University for radio and TV, because that performance thread still working, right? Mm-hmm. But at the time, they had opened up a new little school that was taught by Harvard people called the College of General Education. I think it was the basis for general education classes afterwards, but it was like an integrated class structure that you had one theme, like the division of a Western civilization, and you did the politics and humanity and English and all around that theme, so you'd get the big idea of that, mm-hmm. that part of our history. And it was a wonderful experience, and I just accidentally, got put into it. All of us who were in that class at SBRC School of Public Relations and Communications got placed into that. We ended up with an AA degree, and I was very spoiled for the public relations and communications. It just didn't carry the gravity I seemed to need to go on.
Right.
And I transferred to Bennington and then came back and got married and did all this other stuff we talked about. And plus, in the midst of all that theater, got involved with Timothy Leary, and Richard Alpert, who became known as Ram Dass. And so we did that energy and were really on the creative edge of the psychedelic revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And through that energy, we became interested in going to San Francisco with flowers in our hair.
Right.
That's not where we really ended up. My first husband was an engineer, and he got a job at one of the, Mountain View places down there. And they paid for our transportation out. We took the whole summer and had a beautiful trip west. On that trip west, that was 1967, the Summer of Love. And we were on the edge of the age edge that the kids later said we shouldn't trust anyone over that. But we were the creative edge of it. And we did go west during that time. And this is one of the magics of that trip, and I'd love to read it, but I think it'd take too long right now. I have a story about that trip, and I'd love to do it. I don't know.
I think you should do it, but I want to ask you first, how did the Whole Earth Catalog fit into that?
And well, that's after we get there, so we should probably wait on
but
that
one. But you were also involved in
I was.
And that's really interesting.
So it was very interesting. We're going west, and this story will tell a little bit about it. And truly, we stopped. It was at the time, you said if you use your hands, and here I am, I can't help myself. But when you went on the road in the summer of 67, you'd be like this. Other people who were traveling, and you'd stop in towns and you'd get directed magically to the swim hole and things of that nature. I went to one of these in Ohio, and coming out, someone stopped me and said, "Kit, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Oh, my name's not Kit." And she said, "Well, you look just like my friend Kit. She lives in Palo Alto." And I said, "Oh, well, that's strange. That's just where we're going." And she said, "Oh, here," and wrote down her name. And that, Kit, it was part of the Kit and Ed McClanahan family. Ed is part of the Stanford writing group at the time with Ken Kesey. So that's, I went from the Leary Alpert to the Kesey Stanford writing group.
Oh.
All right, I'll try this. I don't know. We may end up not having so much time. Stillness in flight. You want me to do this?
Yeah.
Okay. Sitting in this corner window, looking out into sun-filtered forest, I remember La Honda. I was still a young mother, two perfect children, a girl and a boy. slim and pretty with long legs stretching to embrace the melodic, ravenous hillsides. The seashore so close, you could sometimes see between the treetops, sun shining on a watery horizon, unconditional love. There was a seeking. I had come from one coast to the other, and I wasn't the only one. It was the summer of love. Across the country, I went with my husband, a bright young engineer, who made mescaline in the basement of our Victorian Boston duplex, and our two children, leaving all our upper middle class possessions in the hands of the Mayflower movers who ripped us off royally and broke what they didn't steal. The national parks were still a secret club. That summer, they had issued the Golden Eagle Club card. You could stay in any park for a full-use flat fee of $10 for the summer. Our nine-window microbus, bought the year before, was fixed to sleep the four of us, and we camped out all the way. Sometimes using mescaline to enhance the already mind-blowing spectacle of natural splendor, we played in mountain streams for hours. We packed the kids up mountain peaks, photographing seeded weeds against the breadth of blue and purple mountain peaks, and getting so close to alpine meadow flowers that I can still smell the soil. I can't remember without weeping with the joy of being there. That summer, I recall putting on makeup in the pure wilderness. I was an oriental courtesan, putting paints on my face against a background of snow-covered mountains or meadows of tall, flowered, studded grasses. From there, I became unadorned. I stopped wearing makeup. I took off my clothing and walked naked and alone in the meadows, feeling the grasses caress my body. I can't remember without my senses awakening, my heart opening to embrace. I gave up bras. Driving on highways, we passed other buses and cars filled with flower children, old and young. Our fingers spelled a V for the victory of recognizing the loving oneness that we were. The intense and secret look of initiation piercing the mystery of the Mona Lisa smiles that passed between worlds, ages, eons. We were on our way home, to where the heart is, to the land where every door is open. Ponds of people mixing in the mud, special places you found out how to get there by being there in the right place and going with the flow. Those people and places led to other people and places. We were the people, the original ones, returning to the earth in our lifetime. More than the messengers, we enacted the dream. We were bridging the time before to the time beyond. We were between worlds. We saw the horizon wet with sparkling fullness, the highway turned to country roads, the hillsides cut to red roots, hanging bare, rocks crumbling to the ground, trees thinning to rolling hills, then grass-tufted dunes, ocean-worn rock holding shell and stone, sea water and weed, sandy shores. It was 72 degrees that first Christmas in California. We were a long way from Boston. Impulsive, the beach sought us out at moonlight, sought us out in midday moments. The window was not enough. We had to be there, alone, together, playing like children, playing with children, with bunches of people. Into the valley we danced, wearing oversized antique dresses, discarded military garb, on array in a new way. I taught at the private school my kids went to and loved. We all loved learning and teaching and loving. It was almost the same thing, and we did it all the time, between teaching and learning. There was an intense stillness in the flight. It is a different window I look out of now. I am alone, and still I love. The trees seek me out, the sunlight and the dark earth. It is almost all the same thing. Between the sunlight and the dark, there is an intense stillness.
You're a wonderful writer.
Oh, thank you, Jean.
Yeah, I really like that. Your husband was an engineer, but he wasn't certainly a typical engineer.
I think we were all bitten by the times, the bug of the times. We were fortunate, I believe, in that way, because, you know, not everyone got the opportunity to explore those doorways that we got to explore and co-create even.
Mm-hmm. So. Certainly the engineers I worked for most of my life never had those opportunities or any culture at all to speak of, you know.
So then I got here and the first thing I did was go to meet Kit, the little thing. She led me to Peninsula School. I had already gotten a job at Stanford and gave notice once I went to Peninsula because it was just so wonderful for my children in an anti-MAME kind of progressive school. And so we all were there for 6 years. We did a commune then and then another commune on Skyline Boulevard. And during that period of time, the Whole Earth Catalog was being formed, and we all lived up on that Skyline Boulevard next door to each other.
Did you do some of the writing for it, or what did you do for it?
Well, actually, my first husband and I separated, and I was together with my second husband then, only not married yet. And he was building airplanes for Stewart, and we all did a lot of social stuff. And I didn't have a job there. I worked at Peninsula School. But I went over and played volleyball with them all the time, and we were part of the whole movement of what it was. And actually, Gurney Norman put my second marriage into the last Whole Earth Catalog. That's the story of divine right that goes page to page on that book.
Oh.
And Gurney was, Norman is one of the Stanford writers also with that group. And so he wrote that. It was a page-to-page thing. And my wedding to my second husband is on the back page, and all through the book is our story.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, that's great. Well, we only have a minute left, so
goodness.
What would you like to do in that minute?
Time flies when we're having fun.
It really does. Yeah, I wish we had more time.
Well, you tell me.
I don't think we have time to read another one. I wish we did because I really love your poetry. How long would Gemini take?
Well,
one minute? Could you do it in 1 minute?
We'll go fast. We'll see.
Okay.
I wrote this just last week because my birthday is June 8th. And I did it on texting. That shows you how modern I am.
Read.
Okay. Well, just like that, tears. Moving into our birthdays, D-A-Z-E, we Geminis wander the open and beckoning road. Wonder at the destination. Embrace what is. Forgive what is not. Focus on what we will as it appears so suddenly at times it blows my mind. And we weep and sing and dance and pray that all beings will give up war and be happy. Reshuffling the cards, resonating with spirit, wings taking us up into our beloved air, pure and redolent. We swim in flowers, sway with divas, touch what is God, goddess, goodness. Plunge to earth in love with being human and humane. Breath and body, we enter the all to live and love in whatever is next.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful having you.
Aww.
And I'm sorry we have to end so quickly. But that was
you,
wonderful.
Thank you, Jean. It was my pleasure.
And everyone, be sure and go to the Senior Center for lunch as soon as you can. It's wonderful and a lot of other activities there. And we'll see you next time.